A recent study by UW-Madison students found that medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin could produce more than a $1 billion economic benefit, in part from fewer traffic deaths. We talked with two of the study's authors about the research behind their estimates and some of the limitations they faced. As the morning show continues, questions for you, the listener. What questions do you have about allowing medical marijuana or decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin? What do you want to know about marijuana in other states? Do you agree with the authors of a recent study that medical and decriminalized marijuana would be an economic benefit to Wisconsin? Why or why not? And what do you just think about this topic in general, about the idea of decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin or medical? Would you buy it for medical reasons? How do you think the drug should be regulated? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ari Brown and Ben McBride are the two authors of a recent study looking at the economics of medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin. The study was completed by students at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. Ari, your study found that allowing medical marijuana in Wisconsin and decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana in the state could produce an economic benefit of more than $1 billion. Can you give us an overview of the main economic benefits that you found?
Sure. So we used a lot of different state data and experiences from other states who have gone through this process to kind of come up with what have those states seen. So the main benefits that we found, first of all, a demand for the actual product itself. We estimated a demand curve for those who would purchase medical marijuana. We also found, alleviated criminal justice enforcement costs if there were to be decriminalization, taking some time off of some time and effort off of those who are currently enforcing laws related to the criminalization of marijuana. And then you mentioned, traffic fatalities. We found that medical marijuana in states that have, in a couple of studies in states that have legalized medical marijuana, they've seen a bit of a substitution effect with alcohol, and the incidence of traffic-related deaths related to alcohol versus related to marijuana, there are fewer deaths when drivers are under the influence of marijuana. So that's where a lot of that benefit comes from. And then we also looked at opioid addiction and fatal overdose risk. In a lot of states that have legalized medical marijuana, there have been substitution effects with using opioids, especially to treat chronic and intractable pain. So studies that we used there were from Canada and Michigan. And then one specific study that we looked at really closely was in Minnesota, where they've been really tracking closely their medical marijuana users who are using for intractable pain. And a lot of the experiences that they've seen have been that their users are substituting marijuana for opioid usage. So those are really the big benefit areas. We also looked at administrative benefits in terms of fees and licenses that would come from users and from dispensaries in the state.
Intractable pain, can you give us a definition of what that is?
So I don't have a direct definition with me, but essentially pain that is long-lasting. One definition that we looked at that's in a lot of state bills is chronic pain, basically pain that is has a really big effect on a person's life and is, not something that they might overcome just living day by day through their life that they might need to take some sort of medication for.
Ari, you also estimated how many people in Wisconsin would consume medical marijuana. How did you make this estimate, and what number did you end up with?
So this was one of the more complicated things that we had to kind of go through. We found that a lot of states that currently have medical marijuana in place don't really do a great job of tracking or publishing data related to their registries. So we went through a lot of picking and choosing in terms of what states we would actually use to come up with that estimate. We ended up using five different states that we used a five-year time horizon in this study, just looking at the first 5 years of implementation. And what we found was there were five states that that have gone through at least 5 years, or sorry, that four states that had gone through at least 5 years, But five states that had good, reliable data in terms of what percentage of their population was on this registry. Florida was in the first year, but they had good data, so we used them for year one. And then New Jersey, Delaware, Arizona, and New Mexico. And we kind of used their percentages of their population in each of the first 5 years to estimate a percentage of the Wisconsin population, kind of coming up with a range from of those five states, the lowest state to the highest state. And making kind of a broad estimate based off of those percentages as to what percentage of the Wisconsin population would be on the registry. And we found, you know, year one, year two, it's under 1%, but by year five, it's actually over 2%. And this is consistent with what other states have seen.
And did you exclude medical marijuana users in Minnesota and Illinois while estimating Wisconsin's potential customers?
We did. The reason that we excluded Illinois was because their medical marijuana law does not include, just recently expanded to include serious diseases causing chronic pain and debilitating conditions. The Wisconsin law that we, the Wisconsin proposal that we modeled our study off of was a proposal in 2017, Assembly Bill 75, that had language in it regarding what conditions medical marijuana could be used for. And it wasn't really consistent with Illinois. So that's why we excluded Illinois. Minnesota we excluded because Minnesota does have medical marijuana in place and actually has great data, but Minnesota is one of the only states that has medical marijuana in place and does not legalize the selling of the flower of the plant. They only sell things like edibles and oils, which is not really consistent with most of the other states that have medical marijuana in place. So we also thought that their data would be a little bit inconsistent.
Ben, quickly before we go to a break here, Ben McBride, has there been previous studies looking at the economic impact of marijuana in Wisconsin?
There have been smaller studies that look at the effects of legalizing medical marijuana, but not a large study like this. And that was really a challenge we faced with trying to get some of the data and determining the impacts. And we hope that there will be more in the future. Obviously, this is a topical area, but we hoped... We hope that we started the ball rolling here.
We'll have more with Ari Brown and Ben McBride on their study of the economic impacts of medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin. The study was completed by students at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. And that conversation continues in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Ari Brown and Ben McBride are two authors of a recent study looking at the economics of medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin. The study was completed by students at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. We're hearing about what they discovered in their research, and we invite your comments and questions about their findings at 800-642-1234. Kurt is on the phone with us from Milwaukee. Kurt, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, I have a question about Colorado. You know, the biggest, one of the problems that the truck drivers are seeing out of Colorado is the fact that in the Department of Transportation doesn't allow people with CDL licenses to be intoxicated with marijuana. I mean, how do you see that? How do you see this legalization affecting, you know, nationwide truck traffic?
Kurt, thanks so much for sharing that. Ben, Ari, which one of you would like to tackle this one?
I can take this one. So I think this is a really good question. It kind of exposes the difficulty with doing research on marijuana, both medical marijuana, which our study looked at, and recreational marijuana, which Colorado has legalized. And that's that at the federal level, marijuana remains a tightly controlled substance that isn't approved for use in any medical or recreational capacity. And so federal regulations, including those produced by the Department of Transportation, continue to classify marijuana as a Schedule I substance. In the states that have decriminalized or legalized any type of marijuana, there's a different level of enforcement, and it contributes to this multiple-tier system. And so, while I can't specifically answer what would happen to truck traffic nationwide, I can speak to the uncertainty that this dual system causes, in that a lot of states with medical marijuana or recreational marijuana laws, it becomes very difficult for businesses to navigate what is permissible, what's not permissible, what services can be used, what services can't be used. And this extends to a whole range of things, not just trucking, but also banking, everything from rent and tenant laws. All of these things have a huge effect, and they're all driven by this kind of dual policy at the state and federal level.
Ari, what do we know about the number of people who use marijuana currently in Wisconsin? Has the drug become more accessible with medical marijuana legalization in neighboring states?
So from what I've seen, Wisconsin stacks up like many other states, specifically states around it. But what we do know is that there does exist a major black market for marijuana. And I do think that, you see Michigan recently in November of 2018, legalizing recreational marijuana, Minnesota and Illinois having, medicinal marijuana in place, that's definitely there. You're going to see some effects from that. To what extent, I'm not sure yet. And because these laws are changed so rapidly and are so different from state to state, and as Ben mentioned, federal legal oversight is kind of in question always. I think it's definitely going to be something to watch going forwards, because we don't know and we can't estimate precisely how much consumption there is and how much black market activity is going on.
Ben, roughly half of the economic benefit that you found would come from fewer traffic deaths. So let's understand that a little better. First, how do you estimate the benefit of one less death? I mean, are we talking about lost wages over the span of a person's life or other costs?
So to answer that question, we use something called VSL, or Value of Statistical Life, which incorporates kind of the social and economic benefits that an average person accrues over their entire life. So it includes any type of cost or benefit that you get from your life, which is kind of a difficult thing to wrap around, because you're monetizing a lot of the things that we think are non-monetizable. But it's the best estimate we have. And in our study, we looked at the literature and said, you know, the VSL number that we use, which is about $10 million, is roughly in line with estimates of a statistical life, and is something that's used widely by both federal and state agencies for calculating these types of benefits.
Because of the limited research, your study included a simulation that tested thousands of possible outcomes. Ben, can you tell us more about that process and what you learned from it?
Yeah, so we use something called a Monte Carlo simulation to perform a robustness check on our estimates. And a Monte Carlo simulation involves specifying a distribution for each of our estimates and then taking random draws from that distribution and plugging them into our equation to test what would happen under thousands of different scenarios. So in the fatal traffic accident example, for instance, we calculated what would happen under a range of different estimates for the increase or decrease in traffic accidents related to the legalization of medical marijuana. And that's why in the study we produce ranges of estimates, not just a single point estimate. We create a range of possible estimates so that any reader who's really looking at it can get a true scope of what the possible benefit or cost would be in each case.
So what do we know about marijuana's effects on drivers? Does it impact concentration or reaction time in the same way that alcohol does, Ben?
So it's difficult to say if it's in the same way that alcohol does. That's a pretty difficult comparison to make. But studies examining the isolated effects of marijuana intoxication on driving performance do find either moderate increases in crash risk or statistically insignificant increases in crash risk. And what's important there is the moderate component. So it's not clear if marijuana really decreases your ability to drive or operate a motor vehicle, or if there's something else going on at the time. And these estimates become super fuzzy when you look at demographic characteristics. So whether the driver is male or female, whether they're old or young, whether they have a lot of experience or they're inexperienced. And so what we did is we looked at aggregate numbers at a statewide level, as opposed to taking an individual driver and simulating what their behavior would be.
Aria, you recommended the state review best practices while designing the program and evaluate its program after 2 years. What state would you consider a model for Wisconsin, either in its practices for establishing a program or for its monitoring?
I think it's really tough to say because, first of all, the law that this is based off of, Assembly Bill 75, is written in the same way as a lot of states that currently have medical marijuana laws on the books. What I would actually recommend is looking at different states for different types of experiences, because I think that there's a lot that different states can say about what has worked well for them and what has not. For example, I would look to Minnesota in terms of data collection. Minnesota does a fantastic job with their data collection. If you go to the Minnesota Department of Health website, they have incredible information available, really detailed demographic information on the users on their registry. But other states have laws that are more in line with what Wisconsin might actually put in place. So I think that naming one or two states for Wisconsin to look at kind of like ignores the fact that Wisconsin can really look to the experiences of a lot of different states for different components of this, because laws change so quickly and because they're written so differently, which is why we used the experiences of so many different states in making all of our estimates. In terms of, you know, creating our demand schedule, we used the experiences of Canada, New Mexico, and Illinois. For our population estimates, we used Florida, Delaware, New Mexico, Arizona. There's just so much out there that can be used as an example. And there's also so much out there to avoid because states have had negative experiences with it.
And Ben, finally, with you here very quickly, what else would you like researchers to explore here, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of these estimates remain uncertain, and that's kind of reflected in the ranges you can see, but also in the availability of data. So a big one that we don't even touch on in this report are the health effects of medical marijuana. And the National Academies recently came out with a compendium of effects, and they recommended that the federal government take a more active role in researching those medical effects. And I'd kind of echo that. I think that's the next area.
A lot of work left to do here. Ari Brown and Ben McBride, the two authors of a recent study looking at the economics of medical and decriminalized marijuana in Wisconsin. Thank you both for coming in this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson, and for Kate Archer Kent, you're listening to the Ideas Network.